Radio. We're broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. Our guest tonight is Ed and Chris Sherwood. There's been some amazing activity in Santa Monica, where it seems to be a lot of ships are being seen by not just them, but we're getting other reports as well. But they seem to be the experts on this subject. So we're going to bring them on right away to find out exactly what's going on in Santa Monica concerning this major UFO flap that's happening there and get to the bottom of this. So, Ed and Chris, are you there?
We're here, James.
How
are you tonight?
We're here. Hello,
oh,
James.
I'm doing great.
Good.
I understand that when did the recent UFO activity start happening above Santa Monica?
It started early April of this year. At least in our experience, while I was out walking a few blocks from our apartment here in Santa Monica, I felt, sensed clairvoyantly, as I have done many times in my life, the presence of something extraterrestrial in the sky. I looked up, and right at the spot I looked, there was what looked like a disc hovering. And it then disappeared in blue sky in front of me, and I kept walking, and I felt it again, looked up, and there it was. So that was the first sighting, but I wasn't able to record it. However, the recording of our sightings really began June 28th of this year, when, again, I stepped outside our apartment, looked up, and immediately spotted a very unusual object, similar to one Chris filmed in 1999 above our apartment. If people want to have a look at some of the images we're referencing, if they go to our website, cropcircleanswers.com, and look at the news page and or the sightings page, particularly the news page right now, they can view images, MPEGs, and read about a lot of these sightings. But back to June 28th, there were two sightings following each other, and the second one I managed to film. And since then, it's just increased dramatically to now almost 40 sightings in the last 9 weeks. More than 50 UFOs have been observed, 28 have been videotaped. Three of the sightings were 30 minutes in duration. All have been daytime events. All have been within a block and a half to several blocks from where we live. And there have been 10 multiple witness sightings and many, almost 30, observer interactive sightings. That is, we did something which, in my experience here and particularly in England, has had many results, i.e. many sightings. And that is simply to invite benevolent ET participation in earth healing and world peace meditations, of which we hold one very regular synchronized meditation on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. And
the specific time, I wanted to get this in because this meditation that has been long time established. There are groups around the world that do a meditation at this time, and it's 11 o'clock in the morning on Pacific time, but in their local time zones around the world, there's many people meditating at that time. So it's particularly powerful.
And we've been participating in that for some time, and recently we started to also hear in Santa Monica rather than where I would prefer to do it in a more natural and sacred setting. But still, we have done the meditations, but before we do the World Healing Earth Healing World Peace Meditation, we invite, we mentally or psychically send out the simple invitation to participate in the meditation. So we're not asking ETs for contact necessarily. We're simply inviting them to participate if they can, would like to, in the meditation that we're doing, and if they can grant us a sign of their participation, i.e. a sign of their presence and a sign of their participation, and permission to record anything that may appear. And we now have done many of these Sunday morning meditations, and within between 5 and 30 minutes, usually an object appears close by.
Now, when you do these, when you have these sightings, you were saying that you actually feel the presence first, or do you receive some kind of a signal that is recognizable, that somebody else might be receiving the same kind of signal?
Well, there might be a collective signal that's put out for people that are sensitive to pick up. In my case, more in the past than recently, I occasionally would have what I understand to be a telepathic communication, but mostly from my teens, really, to the present, I have a clairvoyant ability, which is much more pronounced when I'm actually out of the city and not having to also deal with a lot of distractions. But I, since my early teens, have had an ability to sense clairvoyantly where an object may appear, when, and how many objects often before it appears. And it's a case of I do this at will. I can project my attention in any direction, at any location, and usually sense where. And some years ago, I experienced that here. And recently, I felt, too, the presence of something extraterrestrial, and there it was. And so we've been watching those locations following the meditations, and there's been a lot of activity.
We have a lot of similar things happening up here that's happening there. And I noticed here, and you can't really explain it, but you just feel a presence, you know something's there, and you turn around and you look right at them.
Yeah.
And it's almost like there's some kind of a message, a telepathic message that's telling you exactly where to look, where to turn around and look, and you do, and they're just right there. It's amazing.
Yeah. That's right. I think it's very important part of these sightings to be stressed is their interactive nature. Mm-hmm. And I think, as we've experienced here, at times it seems that they nudge you, but at the same time, what I've been doing for a long time and we've been doing for quite some few years is to what can be called an initiated encounter by the human, the observer, the human observer. And I know that you know this and have done this too, where there may be no sighting when you began, but you either meditate or you simply send out a request, and within a reasonably short period of time, there is a response, an apparent response. And, you know, we have a term for this, a close encounter of the fifth kind, one that is initiated by the human observer. The human observer is doing something which is attracting or encouraging a response.
Oh, it is very important, I think, that we do initiate it and, you know, utilize our free will to open these doors.
Exactly.
And because they can't trespass on our free will, but a lot of us actually chose to come here and do this.
I think so too.
Before we're even incarnated.
Yeah, we agree with that. I've always felt that I'm here to try to help and serve humanity and the planet as much as possible. I'm not here just for myself. And so we dedicate as much of our time and energies to disseminating these type of things and this evidence, and encouraging, trying to encourage others to try this where they are, and to do it with complete sincerity and patience and realization that most of all, I think, we need to bring our consciousness into focus for healing our own planet. And when extraterrestrial intelligences see us doing that, and also with the consciousness of we're not alone, and not only are we not alone, but there are benevolent intelligences out there which will help us, support us, cooperate with us in ways that are possible if we ask for it. And I think
That's the key, because you say they don't want to violate free will, and we only need to ask and invite, and it seems to have remarkable effect.
What are your feelings, Chris, about this as far as when you're engaging the ships or feeling the presence? What does it feel like for you?
Well, I have to say Ed is by far much more psychically sensitive to the presence of these things. I'm a little bit more of a bystander, in that way, and a witness with him. I've witnessed a lot of the sightings, but generally he's the one who senses when and where to look and gets my attention to it. So I've experienced some pretty remarkable things because of his abilities. And in fact, the very day after we first met in England in 1995, I photographed my first UFO, unknowingly, until I looked at my photos when I got back.
Now that happens a lot, because a lot of these UFOs are just out of the visible light, or what we can perceive.
Yes, exactly.
But the cameras can pick up more of the visible light spectrum, and
we have that
happen here a lot. We have beautiful metallic ships hovering right over the field that nobody saw until they went home and developed their photographs or, put them up on the computers, and they said, oh, my God, here's a ship right here, and they never saw it.
That happens very frequently.
And it happens a lot here, too, and it's an ability I've had since 92 to actually see those objects that are not ordinarily visible to cameras. In fact, I assisted a parapsychological researcher by the name of Andrew Collins in 1994. He did an experiment in England for 2 weeks where a group meditated, including myself, twice a day for nearly 2 weeks. And throughout before, during, and after the meditation, he took photographs of an area of sky that I said to him many energy forms, luminosities, and other things were appearing, but no one else could see. And he used exclusively infrared film. And when his images were developed, he had many objects in the sky above the meditators, circular, spherical, that where I said they were. And in the recent sightings, many of the encounters that we could see in an ordinary state of consciousness were preceded by objects that I saw that were just visible for like a second or two at the most, and then they would vanish, but were not visible to other people present.
Are these the light spheres or the orbs that they call? They give them a name. Everybody has a different name for them, but
that's
we call
correct.
Them light spheres or orbs.
Well, no. I'm talking about the same, perhaps the same or similar frequency, but instead of orbs of light, these are metallic. These are extraterrestrial vehicles. These are metallic-looking solid objects, but I'm standing there looking at it, or sensing it and looking and then seeing it, and then it vanishes and may or may not reappear again. And then it's followed by the physical sighting of the object. But no, these are solid extraterrestrial devices or craft in some cases, and they'll turn up ahead of the physical sighting or the sighting that you could see in an ordinary state.
Yeah, they're just stepping out or stepping down, you might say, in frequencies, and you can see them right before they actually step into the frequency where people can see them.
Yeah.
That's pretty, it's not an uncommon thing. Is that there's not very many people can do it, but I've heard it happening. It happens here as well. I used to point things out, and I stopped doing it because other people couldn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, they start thinking you're crazy, you know, or you're messing with them or anything. And so now I just say, take a picture right there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I point right at the object, and they take a picture, and it shows up on their film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really great when it happens. I've witnessed this when I've sometimes taken small groups out into the landscape to do a discrete interactive meditation, is that at least several people in the group, sometimes, you know, quite a few, in the meditation will obviously achieve a similar state of consciousness to myself, so that they will start to report seeing an object or sometimes a sphere of light. And I'll say, okay, where was it, and what color was it, or, you know, what did it look like? And I saw it myself, and it's great to hear that verification that not only did they see it, but they were seeing, they were peeping into that same frequency where these objects and other things often will materialize first before you see them physically.
Now, do you see these kind of out of a side vision, or do you see them when you're looking directly at them?
I see them directly, and I see them at will, and I used to see them. In fact, I saw them for a day and a night on my peripheral vision back on July 22nd, 92. I can actually date the day that I started to see these both balls of light and also extraterrestrial metallic-looking devices that others couldn't see in an ordinary state of consciousness. And it began on July 22, 92, when I walked out into a wheat field in Wiltshire, England, with a crop circle nearby, and I asked God, basically, to allow me to see what I had only otherwise been able to feel up to that point. Since, you know, a preteen, I'd sensed the presence of energy forms, I'd sense the presence of spirits, I'd sense the presence of extraterrestrial things, often, but couldn't see it. Or I'd sense something and then the object would appear, but I often felt that there was something to see or experience before I saw it. I just needed to be able to see that little bit more. And I asked this to God directly in the middle of a wheat field alone in daytime in 92, and within a few seconds, a ball of light appeared right in front of me, like a size of a soccer ball, bright white, and then vanished after about 2 seconds. Okay. And I felt that my request had been answered. Then I started to see a bright light on my peripheral vision that kept appearing, glinting, very bright, and I'd try to look at it, and it would vanish. And I know many people have had this experience, and I realized after a few times of turning my head quickly to look at it, and then it would vanish, that this was interactive, and it was interactive directly with my consciousness, therefore I should be able to communicate with it. So I said, please, if you're going to appear in front of me, because I can't keep turning my head to look at you. Immediately, ball of light appeared in the center of my vision, and it's been that way every day since.
That's
great. And I've seen at this point, I once calculated it about a year ago, it's more than 55,000 balls of light I've witnessed with my eyes since asking in 92.
I have a question. You used the term God when you pray to God for these experiences and things. A lot of people don't realize that these ultra-dimensional experiences are the benevolent UFOs, you might say, are very... very spiritual. They actually, when I have communications with them, they actually use the name God, and mm-hmm. they say God is coming. They said, but it's a frequency, mm-hmm. and it's a force and a frequency. It's not what we think. But
exactly.
They
yeah.
use terms that we might consider angelic or almost biblical or things of that nature, and it kind of threw me off at first when I first experienced mm-hmm. these ETs. I thought I was connecting with some some angelic beings, and
yeah.
when I found out they were actually on a ship and they were intently spiritually and technologically evolved beings, you know, I had to adjust my whole belief system to accommodate that.
Yeah. Yep. You hit the nail on the head. There is a very, very real spiritual dimension and element to the UFO experience, with the extraterrestrial experience, and you know, I've witnessed what I consider to be basically two types of UFO in my life, beyond mundane, you know, objects. In England and you know, particularly in England, and particularly in association with crop circles, I've witnessed what looked like structured vehicles and what also looked like, on other occasions, balls of energy, just pure energy, plasma. And both of these are highly interactive. And in my view, it's been my assertion since early 91 that there are two basic sources to non-man-made crop circle creation, and they involve basically two types of UFO. And both of these types, or rather, particularly the ball plasma, is when you connect with it, you connect almost directly with this spiritual frequency, energy. It seems to be, you know, it's beyond a civilization, beyond an ET intelligence. It seems more as a manifestation, you know, like a little candle flame symbolizing God, presence of God.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. A lot of the people here, when they come to the ranch, they go through a major transformation. And at the last conference we had here, what was amazing is people would come up and say, you know, I had this really bad back pain when I got here, and it's gone, or an arm pain. Or we had one guy that actually checked himself out of the hospital because he had internal bleeding and polyps and very serious condition, and he wanted to come here so bad. His belief was so strong that if he did come here, everything would be fine. And he did. He came here, and everything was fine. He went back and got checked out, and there was nothing there. So this is, you know, they had the evidence before and after, you know, videotapes of his intestines and what was going on, and they went back and checked him out, and he was just clean as a whistle. They just said, we don't know what happened. Did you go and have surgery or something? He said, no. No, he said, I went to the ranch, you know, so...
That's great.
It's pretty amazing what has been happening, and I know a lot of people want to demonize the UFO phenomenon, but we've seen nothing but good come out of it up here, and it's my belief system that the consciousness in which you seek is the consciousness in which you're going to connect.
Yeah.
Yes,
and so
exactly. And there may be definitely negative ET presences as well, which, you know, we feel we've seen evidence of, but by far the ones that we are experiencing and contacting are the benevolent, very highly spiritually evolved
yeah.
ones.
There's a preoccupation, I think, in this country that's had far-reaching consequences in talking so much about abductions and so much about the grave. And people, it seems, often forget that there are other civilizations out there, and there are other civilizations more advanced who don't abduct people. We don't need to abduct people. And they're also here. And they may well be our most distant ancestors. And definitely, you look at the whole subject of ufology, and you look at your own experience, and in my experience, it seems that there's obviously many kinds out there coming here. Some have great care and concern for our planet and for humanity. And as you said, you know, they don't offend free will. At least that is a universal prerequisite for, you know, true evolution. And yet, on the other hand, I've often felt that this Earth is a Genesis project, and we're part of it, and they have, through their interactions with us, through our history, And each time they appear and we see them, they've affected human consciousness. So they are, in effect, partly responsible. And I think they have great concern for the direction in which we, as a species, are going in on this planet. And so we have to be aware of there are ETs out there of the highest kind, and there are also other kinds that may be indifferent to our development or don't want to see it occur. Are in a phase of their own development where they haven't yet. They may have evolved far technologically, but they may not have fully spiritually. And we feel this is a minority of visitors, but we have to remember that there are many other kinds, and like you've experienced and we've experienced and other people in other places are experiencing, if you reach out to them and are patient, you'll see that. You'll see proof of that.
When you say connecting with the more benevolent ones, the very spiritually and technologically advanced beings, actually creates a kind of a protection that keeps any lower frequency or low-level contacts from happening?
I agree, yeah. I think your intention is very important, and that in itself, and also because you are really, with your consciousness, trying to reach out or trying to include, you have at least the awareness of that there are benevolent spiritual kinds out there, and you have enough awareness to also invite them or to send out a request to them and be patient enough for that to, because there may be many reasons why they don't always appear when you might like them to. We found here, they don't appear every time. We know this isn't about us in that they're not trying to, they certainly aren't encouraging any ideas of people being special. But there are, in the mass of humanity, there are relatively very few people in the collective who really are going out on a limb, really are putting, making themselves available with complete sincerity and spiritual focus, and at the same time are aware and are not afraid to reach out to other intelligences.
Yeah, fear is the number one thing that people have to overcome, because if they sense any fear at all, they back away, and that's a clear indicator that you're not ready. And they're very telepathic, and they can scan the consciousness of the group. And if the group is fearful or not appreciative, or doesn't have pure intent, an open mind, or loving heart, they can scan and feel that. And then that's what we notice here is they'll stay up high. They won't drop down low, but if we have a real focused group that does have pure intent and they're putting their intention out there and they're meditating as a cohesive group, that these ships will drop right down and power up and show themselves and do it for the entire group, you might say.
That's right. I saw that witnessed very well in 1992 when I served as the psychic eyes and ears for Stephen Greer in England. During the C-SETI project of 1992 in Wiltshire. And a week before C-SETI began, and I wasn't even aware of C-SETI at the time, I sensed that there was going to be a major interaction between Crop Circle and UFO researchers and the sources of the genuine phenomenon in Wiltshire. And I sensed a particular location, a location I didn't know previously. On the map, it was just a wood. And I felt that I had to go there and make myself available for interaction. So I put a tent there. I camped there for a month. But within a day, within a night, actually, not even a day hadn't passed, events started to happen. But 3 days later, 40 people all descended on the same location where I was, including Dr. Stephen Greer and Colin Andrews and others. And so immediately I had the verification that there was going to be an attempted interaction. But I found the group was way too big, and there were all kinds of people there, and even people who really shouldn't be there. they didn't have a spiritual motivation. They weren't calm. They were more like spectators and wanting to see a show. And there were all kinds, some very genuine, sincere, and psychic people too. But I felt that immediately that night, the first night of the Sea Study Project in 92, that the ETs were holding off because the conditions on the ground with the group was not suitable. There were too many people, there was too much excitement, too much expectation, too many emotions, not enough clear focus, and not enough cooperation between your psychic element of the group and your technical element of the group. And when that was sorted out, I made suggestions to Stephen to make the group smaller, to move away from the hill, down into a crop circle, and away from many people trying to find us, make it more discreet, more humble, and listen rather than sit and talk and be like a spectator to any moving object. And that's when they showed. That's when they turned up.
And we had the exact same experience here. we had quite a few people here, and the topic kept kind of going into the ego and just random things. And I noticed that the ships would come in, and they'd fly right over our area where we were all the time, and they would power up and light up, and then everybody else would take credit for it and say, oh, they're here because we're here. And I said, well, they've been coming here for about 11 years now, so... I don't even want to take credit for that either, because I know they're coming here many, many years, even before I've been here 20 years. Mm-hmm. So they were here. Boy, there's just a 100-year history of recorded UFO activity in the area.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot of strong energetic ground and air vortexes where you are. Especially with the volcano zones you have not far.
Mm-hmm.
Very suitable area, I think, for them to come and charge up and fly on. And of course, you being there as aware as you are, then they have to turn up.
Well, why do you think they're turning up in Santa Monica right now?
Well, I think that mostly, or at least half of it, is because they have been invited. I've done this in England. Before I came here, I've been living in the States in Santa Monica for about 11 years. But before that, I did a lot of similar things in England, but out in the landscape, in the countryside, sacred sites, and in and around crop circles, and have had a lot of responses. Here, I have not really tried to do that in the city itself, in the hustle and bustle and the noise and the lots of distractions, both in the air and on the ground. Very busy airport, world's busiest airports here. There hasn't been a lot, but recently, or rather 3 months ago, I got quite sick for a while. And as part of my recovery, I said to the universe, I'm going to find a bus stop nearby where I can look at the sky, because we don't have a roof access. We don't have an ideal place to do sky watching. In fact, every time we go outside and do some sky watching in the city, we draw lots of unwanted attention from all kinds of people. And so we kind of like take a risk, every time we do it. And there's one reason why I hadn't done it previously. But I said to the universe, as part of my recovery, I would go outside and sit at a bus stop and look at the direction of, look at the sky view, where I have felt previously, if an object is going to appear, it's going to appear mostly there. And my first sighting was at the bus stop, taking a break from a day of, kind of a rebound from this illness I had, which affected me quite strongly.
And also, we have had some past sightings, not too many, a couple over the past few years, 1999 videotaped what we've been calling a flying boomerang. And until the recent sightings, we didn't really relate it to anything, but some of the things we filmed recently look very similar to this object that we filmed in 1999. And also in 2004, we were out walking and spotted, Ed sensed an object and spotted this odd object in the sky, which looked very much like the flying humanoids that have been filmed in Mexico over the last couple of years. And we had recently seen a lot of video of these flying humanoids, and lo and behold, this morning we're out walking and here's something identical to the flying humanoids that filmed in Mexico going over our neighborhood.
This is just, sorry to catch you off, this was just 2 months after we attended a presentation given by Santiago Utarrilla from Mexico. At the end of 94, he presented to MUFON, 2004, he presented to MUFON LA and OC the videos that have been coming out of Mexico since 94 of apparent flying humanoids. And they appear, at least in 94 particularly, to be covered in something dark, or like a dark cloak or a dark cover or suit. And so we attended the presentation, we watched nearly a dozen different video clips from Mexico, and then 2 months later, we witnessed the identical thing fly over our apartment. And it happened about 11 hours after I requested a close encounter of the extraterrestrial kind. I didn't specify anything more than that, and perhaps I should have done, because it didn't do anything negative or scary, because some of these have down in Mexico. It just appeared, and I recorded it for about a minute. And then recently, we had a completely different type of possible flying humanoid sighting, which I videotaped for 7 minutes, again, flying close to our apartment. This time, it seemed to have a sphere above it, which may have been the device that helped it fly through the sky. And below was this, what looked like, a humanoid figure in white. And I learned from Santiago Utarrilla only a few months ago that as of late last year in Mexico, above Mexico City, they've started to film flying humanoids that look white in appearance, glowy.
They're luminous.
Luminous.
Yeah,
this one looked like it was almost luminous, white. And we have it on our news page. Again, people listening, go to cropcircleanswers.com and look at the news page and scroll down to August 2nd. They'll find this sighting. So why so many things happening above Santa Monica right now? We think several reasons. One, because they're being invited to participate in global earth healing world peace meditations. That's probably the main reason. They're affirming that. They're affirming they're here. They're affirming that they support these kind of things. And allowing us to film them also allows us to pass this on to others and encourage others to do this where they are, which I'm sure they would like. Another reason, because we've been making ourselves more available to watch the sky with a camera available. And another reason, which I think could be a contributing factor, is just after I started to recover from being ill, which was around about early June, I started work on an article about UFOs and crop circles, tying the two phenomena, but very much referencing the extraterrestrial presence and how it's been revealed, even in the crop circles, and how one of the things we really need on this planet, humanity needs, is to solve the energy crisis. And the extraterrestrial civilizations have obviously solved this problem. They have means of transport that we could only dream of. And we know, that this is a major problem on our planet, and if we can only find out how I mean, we know, as I'm sure you do, that there are people working on this. Mm-hmm. But every time one of these vehicles appears, I feel, particularly from the benevolent kind, they are demonstrating this technology. They are showing us other possibilities, other realities. And I discovered something more than 10 years ago referenced in some crop circles, some pictograms, some non-man-made pictograms, which directly relate to how we could perhaps solve the energy crisis. So just before these sightings really took off locally, I started work on an article including discoveries I made more than 10 years ago about crop circles. I've been studying crop circles since 1984, been researching since 1984, and in 1990 and in 91, I made a number of discoveries about what some of the pictograms were saying. And for the first time in writing, I started to write down some of these things I'd discovered, which, again, if I was putting myself in the mind of perhaps some of these ETs that have been appearing, they might be trying to encourage me to finish this article, because I've been proclaiming some of the information in talks, but I've never written it down. And it does include scientific information.
It might be time for that. I definitely know that these fuel-less energy devices, and not just anti-gravity, but counter-gravity, is here on the planet right now. And it's even in some private hands as well, as the black projects and things of that nature. I've worked with some people that actually were involved in some of the black projects, and they make it very clear that we have the technology right now. We have the fuel-less energy technology. Mm-hmm. It's all available right now. It's here on the planet. But, you know, we have to go up against, you know, the oil cartels.
Yeah,
exactly. And
there's so many financial, huge money interests.
Yeah, we're enslaved through dependency, and they're going to keep it that way because that's what their power base is dependent upon. So,
yeah, well, I think we can only do that for so long because, again, another reason why the sightings above Santa Monica have been a lot recently, I think, is a sign of also what is happening globally. And as we know, the UFO phenomenon over the last few decades has been increasing and being more overt, and especially since July 11th, 1991, when Mexico, during a total solar eclipse, witnessed a mass sighting over the world's largest city. And since then, you know, Mexico has become a real hotspot for UFO activity.
Seen hundreds of UFOs, and some of the footage coming out there where they're panning the sky, and you see 100 in one frame, and then they pan it over. There's another 150 or so in that one.
Hundreds.
I mean, there had to be, you know, I would say, being very conservative, I would say there was at least 400 or 500 ships, up to as many as maybe 900 to 1,000.
And this is a major turn. You know, for them to be doing this, even though they're doing it often at very high altitudes, so again, it's not scary. There's not a lot of people necessarily witnessing it right away. I think it's a sign for those people who are paying attention that they're increasing their activities. They're increasing their sighting.
Oh, yeah.
They want to prick our consciousness and wake it up globally. And they want to do it before it's too late. And obviously the planet, the destruction that we are causing upon the planet is really the clock that's ticking. And there is a, you know, a point where you can do only so much damage before you can't repair it.
Exactly.
And even though we're not necessarily at that point, which I really feel we're not, we're certainly doing a good job of getting there. And so I feel that a lot of these sightings here and elsewhere, and the increasement of them, is in many ways in step with the concern that they have with the planet, and how humanity needs to wake up and realize we're part of a cosmic community.
Definitely.
And we're souls from the universe. You may not know where you came from, but we have a soul, and we are here for a time, but we may have been here many times before, and we may have been elsewhere many times before, and we may all have had this experience. We just don't necessarily fully realize it or have the information about it, but these sightings are instrumental, I think, and they have certainly been in my life, to triggering that information. And the lost historical knowledge of humanity, of its contact with extraterrestrials and how it's been nudged and influenced at times, spiritually and sometimes otherwise, needs to be remembered. We need to remember who we are. And the amnesia that many people are in needs to change.
There's a long history of, it's in all the ancient Vedic scriptures, and they give very clear descriptions of the ships, down from physical to energy to light ships, the magnetized light, you might say, or consciousness. And, it's the frescoes, the cave paintings. It's everywhere.
Every culture is global.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
And since what we call the beginning.
Yeah, and I noticed, if you go to the South American countries and Mexico and a lot of the other countries, and if you go to any sacred site and say, who built this, they point up.
Yeah.
Every time they go, the gods built it,
the
guys that came from the sky,
All the ancient cultures, and we've so lost, as in general, on the planet, lost touch with this knowledge and lost touch with our feeling of being spiritual beings on the whole.
And they don't shoot at them over there.
So, we
had something happen here, which wasn't, I think it's done now, but we had a very large golden ship fly right over our place.
Oh.
And just on the next mountain there, we started seeing laser fire and plasma weapons coming from the mountain up and actually hitting the ship.
Oh.
And all the ship did was just power up a little bit. It got a little brighter and just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And, people wonder, why we don't have contact, and especially in the United States, why we don't have contact. And I think the main reason is that it's the aggression.
Human response, exactly.
And, our response to the ships, and in South America and Mexico and these other places, they don't behave that way. So,
That's right. That's why we think so many have been happening in Mexico, because if you think of each country in the world like a person, and then you look at all those people and think of them as a family, and you look at Mexico, you see that person is very open, very open to the possibility and presence of extraterrestrial intelligences, and that they have that in their culture, and they've kept that to a certain degree alive, so that when the sightings occurred during the eclipse on July 11th, 91, you had a culture, a country, which responded well, really well, by putting it on national television.
Yeah, the media was very open to
covering it, and the population eating up the sightings and wanting more, or certainly being at least open and not afraid. And so that's the kind of response that the ETs need to see, and they've obviously encouraged. They've responded very well to that.
And we've been on Telemundo and Univision, and I think it's Buenos Dias, America or something.
Mm-hmm.
Our footage has been all over Mexico and South America, and it's received so much more airtime than here. We had the History Channel show it and the Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think I got like a 7-second soundbite in there.
Sure,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, they don't treat the subjects seriously in American media.
Exactly, and when you give it a spiritual twist to it or whatever, that's the quickest way to get yourself thrown out of almost all the UFO communities. If you don't go into the nuts and bolts or the bad engineering, black project or abduction, and keep it in the past, like Roswell and things like that, if you don't do that, and you start giving them, say, hey, it's not in the past, it's happening right now. It's very highly advanced contact, very spiritual. They don't want to hear that. That's the last thing they want to hear.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
True.
Yeah, we've witnessed, you mentioned a moment ago about the aggressive response. Well, in England, I've had many close encounters out in the landscape with technology, extraterrestrial technology, in some cases with many witnesses. And when the last really dramatic ones I had was with Chris in 2000 at the end of July, and the object that appeared was no more than 250 feet away from us. We were in a crop circle at the time, and it was at night time. But unfortunately, the silent object, which was a very peaceful encounter by itself, was being followed by a military helicopter. And when the military helicopter spotted us in the field, or the next field, it split away from the object.
It came straight at us. It rushed at us. It was the most terrifying experience for me. Ed has had this experience before, and he knew what to expect, but it was just, you know, shocking to have a Black Hawk helicopter charging at you with its lights off in the middle of the night.
At head height level, you know, coming just above the height of the crop, straight at you. And as it left the UFO and crossed from one field to the next with a hedge in between, it turned off all its lights. So we had this black silhouette, loud black silhouette coming right at us.
And we videotaped this. We have it on videotape.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was another example. And, of course, where that happened, it was in Wiltshire, where there are a lot of military bases around. So whenever something turns up, and I'd often, because I lived there for some years, would make a joke that, you know, if you didn't see the UFO, look for the military helicopter, because more than 90% of the time it's pursuing the UFO, or rather more than 90% of the time if a UFO appears in the valley, whether it's a ball plasma or whether it's ET technology, it's intercepted right away by a military helicopter, one or more.
Yeah, we get black F-15s here with no markings on them at all, and the Black Hawk helicopters as well as some other pretty large helicopters coming in. We just had an event here about 3 weeks ago where we heard this loud noise coming over the house, like a whooshing noise, but there was no wind at all. And then after that, we heard this deep, low pulse like I have on my website, that deep, deep pulse of a ship. And then all the phones went down and the internet went down. You know, everything went down. And then within about 3 or 4 minutes, we had these two big old black helicopters flying right over the house. And, I mean, they're just right on it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a pity because it spoils the experience and affects the contact. And
But that sighting that we were just describing did have kind of an amazing ending, because the helicopter ended up leaving the location, pursuing the first UFO, and a second totally silent and amazing UFO that was very close to us came up and took place where the helicopter had been, and we watched it and videotaped it until it just blinked out, disappeared. But it was amazing. It was very close, and four lights in a diamond pattern. We could see very clearly.
And it was also witnessed by two other groups of two people in different locations, half a mile to 2 miles away, who also witnessed and filmed the object. So we had like three independent witnesses, unaware of each other, witnessing and filming. And then almost immediately upon witnessing ourselves, we had this military response. But then hours to the following day, the whole area was swarming with military. And, you know, this I've encountered many times in England particularly, and have, you know, this definitely, in my view, is not the way to respond. And there's more to be learned by being humble and discreet and going out and doing psycho-spiritual activities.
You ever wonder about the mindset behind that? You think these beings are at least interstellar, probably interdimensional, and they have technologies millions, if not billions, of years ahead of us, and we're chasing these things around and trying to shoot them down and steal the technology so we can use it in our war industry.
Yeah.
So primitive.
It's crazy. Yeah, we must seem so primitive to them.
And, you know, with a blink of an eye, they could probably turn this planet into a cinder, but we think, you know, we have the right to try to shoot these things down.
In England, I've seen some amazing examples about where several times, a ball plasma, for example. So on this occasion, it wasn't extraterrestrial per se. ball plasma appeared at close range, and within 2 minutes it had six military helicopters heading towards it from different vantage points, and as they closed in on it, it vanished and reappeared further away down the valley, some miles away. Just left them in the blink of an eye. And,
yeah, we've had that happen here where they're hovering, and then I was meditating. I had a telepathic contact with this female on the ship, and I asked her, I said, are they a threat to you? And she said, no. And I said, are you sure that they, even with some exotic weapons? She said, no, they were so far beyond that. And then she showed me, because there was a military jet vectoring right in on her, and she just disappeared when it got close enough. And after it went by, she reappeared again and flew right up its tailpipe and then vanished into this light, like, it looked like all these little fingers of light that went over the plane and just disappeared.
Wow.
And I saw that, you know, with that kind of technology, it's pretty senseless to try to use any kind of aggression on beings of that nature.
Yeah, and also the more spiritually advanced extraterrestrial civilizations are also the most advanced technologically.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to get to the most evolved, and that includes technology, then you need to develop yourself spiritually. So I think that, you know, there is an element within our world that wants to you know, get access to certain technologies for very limited and fear-based reasons, and they will find that if they succeed in any way, they'll be succeeding with the wrong kind, and
exactly.
That'll probably not result in success down the road. So, you know, if you can do a meditation synchronized with others, and you can put out a psychic request to the infinite mind of creation to pass this on to any benevolent ET civilization to participate if they can and would like to in your meditation, and they turn up. I mean, I think that's a very profound thing. It's to me, as much, if not more profound even, than having contact with these intelligences, because it shows that they are listening. They hear what you are saying, and they are supporting it, and they're doing it peacefully and safely.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to the what we were talking about before, the consciousness in which you seek is the consciousness in which you connect. And
yeah.
In the past, we've had some people up here, different alphabet agencies and things, people of that nature, and they've been coming up here trying to figure out what's going on here, because they're not having contact with these extremely advanced beings, the benevolent ones, because their intent isn't correct. But the main reason they're coming up to check on is to make sure that we're not contacting the grays or some of the lower level contacts that they actually connected with in the past, because it went really bad. You know, they just wanted the technology, and the more spiritually evolved ones said, no, we're not going to give you the technology until you choose peace and choose to, you know, direct your energies into the awakening and healing of humanity and the earth. And they said, well, thank you very much, but this other group over here is going to give us the technology, and, you know, all we need to do is give them some genetics and let them abduct a few people, you know.
Yeah.
And so that scenario went really bad for them, and it didn't work out too good, and so basically what we're finding is that we're not getting any kind of a negative response anymore from these agencies. Mainly they're here to find out who they are and who we are working with. And a lot of them actually know that our future depends on working with these more benevolent ones that,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Are
I'm
definitely
sure
because of the condition of the environment and the consciousness here and what and some of the other earth changes and cosmic events coming, they know that these benevolent ETs are going to play a very important part, and so they're not interfering as much as they used to.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That's good to know that, because that's definitely why we feel that their presence is on the increase. It's got to, it seems very kind of slow and gradual from our perspective, but it, you know, would take a lot of a lot of other people becoming aware and bringing them into, you know, the knowledge of this presence to, you know, help affect the real change that's going to help the planet.
For more than 20 years now, I've been anticipating and seeing increasing signs that we're heading in that direction, and I feel like I'm not alone, but other people who are picking up this collective, perhaps, impression. But I really think that there's going to be a global, and a real global, simultaneous mass sighting of extraterrestrial vehicles, technology, presence in the not-too-distant future, and that this will be something to really affect human consciousness more than anything else. And it'll be a physical event, just like, for example, we've seen many dress rehearsals. We've seen over many decades that they, when I say they, I mean many kinds of extraterrestrial intelligences, but particularly the benevolent ones, have been gently testing our sociological responses by appearing more and more over centers of population. And look at Mexico, look at Mexico City, look at how they stimulated our interest, and then because they received our interest, you know, when I say ours and human interest, they fed more. They gave more signs, more sightings, and to the point where, you know, they've had thousands and thousands over the last 15 years, all of which I think is a little, you know, you can look at Mexico and think of the world, and you can look at the fleets and many of the objects that are appearing, that, you know, it's not like Independence Day. It's not big and scary sitting right over you. It might be small and high up and sitting up there for a long period of time, for hours even, in places, and allowing people to witness it without fear and to wonder and to you know, have time to realize that they are looking at something that's not terrestrial. And I think that we've seen dress rehearsals, we've seen little examples and some great examples in places like particularly Mexico. And that if we imagine this happening globally, I mean, last year, for example, just before Hurricane Katrina occurred, and I wrote about this, it's on our sightings page of our website, before Hurricane Katrina, this historic storm blew through and did its damage, there were major UFO fleet signs happening on both sides of the Gulf Coast, making signs in the sky. And on the Mexican side of the coast, there were two major simultaneous events that happened over two capital cities on the same day, witnessed by many people, and were videotaped. And these happened shortly before Hurricane Katrina occurred, and on the other side of the Gulf Coast, just 9 days before Hurricane Katrina was declared a tropical storm, there was a UFO cross filmed in the sky above Florida and witnessed above St. Petersburg in Florida, consisting of up to seven UFOs forming a Latin cross in the sky. So imagine a UFO fleet, a small UFO fleet of seven objects, instead of randomly in the sky, they're forming a cross. Again, giving us prophetic signs, giving us affirmations that they are aware, they're there, they're concerned, and that they will allow us to see them. And that I think as time goes on, and increasingly so, in an accelerating fashion, as we have seen over the last, particularly the last 15 years, we are going to see sightings increase over centers of population, and I think eventually we will see a simultaneous event, which may take place over many days and nights, but will involve many, many objects around the world. And after many days and nights of this, perhaps, you know, I've heard from a very reliable source more than 20 years ago that this could take place over a period of 9 days and 9 nights. And this source, which I've had many experiences with, I've not found it wrong yet about anything. So I'm all ears and looking out for signs of this approaching.
I've got to ask them about November.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of information about just some major shifts happening in November. And what I found out is if you do the math on the Mayan calendar, that actually November is just a major key event. It's a major astrological event happening. And they're telling us over and over that big event happening in November. They're not giving us details of what this is, but they're saying over in November, and they've always said in the next 2 years that there is going to be a mass sighting where it'll be undeniable and it'll be worldwide.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
it's been saying that for some time. That's great to hear that kind of confirmation.
And they said it's not that far away. It's people are thinking it's not for another 10 years or whatever, but it's getting very close now.
Exactly. I think, and I don't know for sure, but certainly in my own experience, I can say that I have no idea exactly when, but I do feel like, I don't want to make predictions necessarily, but I do feel like it is sooner than rather than later. And if we've been paying attention to the signs that we've had thus far, at least for over the last 40 or 50 years of UFO activity, if you look at the writing on the wall, there is definitely a global event coming up in our near future.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely going in that direction. I mean, they just flew over Madrid. I don't know if you saw those photographs, but there were hundreds of ships over, the capital of Spain, and we're getting a lot of footage coming from China right now. Just incredible footage, where they're flying right over the, the rooftop.
Yeah.
There.
Exactly.
And they have the ship on film and it powers up and just vanishes.
Yeah.
And this footage is coming in from everywhere now.
Yeah.
It's all around the world. So
it is. It's starting to be over major cities. Even right before the Olympics, over Milan there was an hours long sighting that many people saw on videotape of objects that hung there in the sky.
What's funny is you'll never hear about these events in the American newspapers, and people say, "Oh, there's no censorship." And I said, "Really? When's the last time you heard anything about water technologies or fuelless energy or UFOs? When's the last time you saw anything about, the Phoenix Lights?" Or it took the Phoenix Lights years to come out.
Yeah, I know.
What, what happened there?
It's a crime. It's amazing. It's like a massive denial that is run by a few, orchestrated to affect many, but results in a massive lack of acknowledgement to the fact we're not alone. I mean, how can ETs, benevolent ETs, openly help us in almost any respect unless we acknowledge their existence?
Exactly, and ask for that help, which is very important.
Exactly.
We had ABC out here, and we had a big ship fly right over, powered up right over our heads, and then went up. And we also had the cameras rolling. I said, right above those two trees, keep your camera rolling. And we got them. The ships appeared right exactly where I was told they would appear. And we got them on film. And then we had just incredible footage to give them. But when they did the event, it was amazing. They brought in debunkers, and they brought in, and they didn't show the really good stuff that was just, would have just nailed it, They showed the kind of vague stuff, but they did a pretty good job over the interview, and then they killed it.
It just took off
locally, and it was supposed to go international, and somebody made a phone call, and it was dead.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We've had this situation with the media too many times, to the point where we almost feel like you just can't get anywhere. But in 2002, we did a series of television interviews, and in almost each case, we were interviewed for up to several hours. CNN interviewed us for 3 hours. And then when you look at the footage, or rather the interview that they include, it's less than a minute. And it's
and the debunkers are, you know, taking their shots.
Oh yeah.
They have to put a spin on it. Every
we had the head of OMSI Planetarium. They brought him on, and he goes, "Well, I don't see anything spectacular here at all." He said, "This is just basic meteor satellites," and he goes, "This one here looks just like the space shuttle." And the thing is, the thing was landing on the mountain. It was on the mountain, and it morphed from one to three ships, then back to one again, and then took off, and he said it was the space shuttle.
Oh, God.
And they showed it in the background while he was talking, and I was just saying, how can anybody in their right mind look at that footage and call that a space shuttle?
Yeah.
And I used to use it in some of my presentations, just saying, look, here's what the authorities say when you show them, you know, this kind of footage. And people were shocked. They just couldn't believe they were hearing that.
Yeah. It's hard work to try to get even what you think might be open and interested or curious people within the media to follow through with integrity with the project, because we've been interviewed by a number of different television things, which at first, you know, you meet the producers and the camera people, and there's this apparent sincerity and interest and so on. And then, you know, they take the information and maybe some footage, and then when you see what they did with it, it's like, well, why bother? You
know,
why make a documentary if you can't recognize some of the major things here?
They used a lot of my footage and then interviewed other people and made it look like it was attached to them, but almost all the footage was taken up here at the ranch. Oh.
And even people sometimes you think should be more open. Like, you know, recently we were invited to be on a radio station to give an interview, and we received an email that seemed all friendly and nice, and like there was real interest in our footage. And when we got on the show, we were treated with great disrespect and irreverence, and not that we want to be treated in any way special, but just we weren't treated with respect, and it clearly turned into, you know, put us off the show very quickly, claiming there was a bad connection, and then as soon as we were off, he started making debunking comments about all of our stuff. So, you know, so it's like a kind of a minefield out there. You try to proceed with sincerity and the best material you have, and you just like hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
And you said it, James, a little bit ago too, it's the ego. There is so much ego among people who maybe have absolutely nothing except personal interest in getting attention or camera time or something through the subject. And, you know, they don't really care, you know, what is factual, what's spiritual, what any truth about, you know, the subject other than what they're able to get attention, you know, sensationalizing or, you know, just from a competitive, very ego-driven place.
We've had a lot of problems with in the realm of crop circles, because both Chris and I have been researching crop circles intensively now for almost 40 years combined. And, you know, we know almost everybody in the subject, and what started off for me back in when I entered the field to conduct on-site research in 1990, first time I ever kind of agreed to work alongside other researchers, because since I was a child, I have long received the impression from my contacts, my extraterrestrial contacts, and also I feel my inner voice, you know, my higher self warning me that there is so much ego in parapsychology, you know, covering UFOs, crop circles, everything else, so much ego. And when an experiencer, a genuine, sincere experiencer, tries to interact with that so-called community, you run into this problem of being used and abused.
So you become the target, because they have their following, they have their group, and they want to maintain that group at any expense. And if you come in with more knowledge or better proof or anything of that nature, you're a threat. And so they do everything they can to discredit your work or or
from
you?
We've experienced that, and at the same time been heavily plagiarized. Ed's really suffered from that as well, where, you know, they want to ignore you, block you, and undermine you, but steal from you too, you know?
We've been excluded from many conferences and many television documentaries on crop circles because of this competitive ego, cliquey groups dominating certain things, and so, you know, we are very much a couple in this subject. We have recognized each other's research findings, experiences, and have, you know, dedicated ourselves to trying to disseminate this, and you know, plant seeds where they'll grow, hopefully, and stimulate perhaps others to question, to look into more than perhaps what's out there.
Yeah, well, you're not alone in the targeting, because
I've
experienced the exact same thing.
Yeah,
I went to some conferences. I won't mention the name of them, but you know, I brought out my information and I talked about how you have to have the consciousness to connect with these ETs. And after a near-death experience, I had a 30-year journey of intense spiritual training before I could really understand this experience and connect with them. And there's a lot of people that just want to come in overnight and say, okay, I want to ride on the ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we had a guy here just a little while ago that was very wealthy, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, your checkbook's not big enough, you know, for a ride on the ship, because, you know, neither they nor do I really care about the money. You know, it's all about consciousness, and we have to rise in consciousness before we can, you know, connect with these beings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny, but at these conferences, boy, you know, we're telling people stories that, oh, don't worry about anything. They're going to come and they're going to beam you up. They're going to take you up on the planet. You know, they're going to feed you, house you, give you nirvana land. And other people were saying, oh, they're all here to eat you. And other people were saying, oh, they're going to abduct you and probe you. And you know, I heard, you know, and everything down to it's all nuts and bolts and it's all secret government. Mm-hmm. And my message was a threat to the other ones, because along with the message, I had the evidence.
Yeah, and exactly.
Incredible evidence. And that just really upset their apple cart.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, I haven't been invited back to some of these major UFO groups just to speak, because, you know, some of the key people there that are in it for all the wrong reasons got very offended by what I had to say. And I didn't attack anybody else's truth. I just told truth as I knew it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which is what we try to do, and have received the same kind of response.
I started very much psychic photography research of photographing luminous energy, which I am able to see, and have been seeing every day since 1992, July 92. And because of being able to see it and sense it, we've been able to, you know, I can say to anyone, point your camera in such and such direction and photograph the object. And in the past, when I started off trying to share my ability to help the research of others, I found that when people around me who would do the photography side of things or the filming side of things, because I would rather leave that to others and do the direct psychic interaction, because that's my forte, it's my strong point, they wouldn't share the results. They wouldn't share the photographic evidence afterwards. And I've experienced this from people you really wouldn't expect to be like that in ufology. And after some years of, you know, trying to bring my ability to the groups, to the researchers, to try to help, you know, work as a team, and assist things to develop, I just ran into this problem time and time again, where people would be sincere and genuine, it seemed at first. They wanted to work with you because of your ability. And then when, of course, you help them to document it or acquire evidence, they then suddenly change. So, and they wouldn't share it. And after some years of this and getting tired of this, we started our own. And I must admit, I really much prefer not to have to work with a video camera. When I do, I cannot be as psychic as I can be without, and I have to sort of operate almost psychically boring when I'm working with the video camera, because you know, your attention is split from the subject you're trying to record to the equipment you're having to work through. And you know, recently we've had a lot of cooperation from upstairs, so we've been able to document many of the sightings, but they've been very difficult to document. The technical side, the equipment not always working well or being terribly limited. And of course, if things don't work when you need them to work, it can get very frustrating. And of course, that can make the whole experience, the psychic experience, diminish. So we've had this problem of lack of cooperation right across the board, and to the point where, like yourself, perhaps, you know, we've had to go out and get our own cameras and get our own evidence and say, you know, you're all entitled to your own opinion, and we're not trying to prove anything here. We're just trying to show evidence of what we're experiencing. And
yeah. That's exactly why I created this radio show, and that's also why I created eSETI, because I tried to work with a lot of other groups and said, hey, there's something phenomenal happening here. Other UFO research centers, I said, come on up, bring your cameras, these things are happening. And each time I ran into extreme resistance and prejudice, and like you said too, people would come up and they'd get incredible footage, and we would have a deal, look, if you shoot something that's incredible here, you can keep it yourself and do what you want with it, but you have to release it. It's part of the public domain here,
so
everybody can see it.
And
I said, this is for everybody here, and you're welcome to come here and have fun and experiment, shoot. And it was amazing. Each time they get something good, boy, you could not, you know, wrestle it out of their hands or anything, and then they'd make you into the bad guy so they could keep their footage. And I said, you know, we have an agreement. We already made the agreement. You signed the agreement when you came here. It was very clear. Why is there a problem? You know? And I don't pursue it, you know, I don't push it or anything else, but I do kind of call them on their own integrity.
When these events happen.
I've seen that exact same thing happen. And know of people that have absolutely amazing footage that, you know, people would be just astonished to see, but they don't want to share it publicly.
Yeah, it's amazing. It just goes on and on, the human folly, and they wonder why we don't have contact.
Exactly.
You know, you look at what we go through here on the Earth, you know, on the Earth, trying to get this information out and get this footage out, and all the egos we have to deal with and the personalities and the complexities, you know, and the people go, well, why don't they just land on the White House lawn? Or
Every time.
Yeah, and I just say, well, you know, they're kind of looking for intelligent life.
Exactly.
And that's not the place
that's
to go. They're looking for people with pure intent and high integrity, and you know, that arena just isn't the place to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're getting a signal here. We're running out of time.
Okay.
And so, again, why don't you give your website out?
Okay. Our website is called cropcircleanswers.com.
That's Crop Circle Answers with an American accent, just in case.
And for the latest information, the best place beyond the homepage is to go to the news page, where we have some thumbnail images of many of the sightings we've experienced locally over the last few weeks, including some MPEGs. We've witnessed, you know, some things that can perhaps best be described as containers of UFOs.
Okay, I'd like to. I know we're running out of time. Well, before we do, I just would like to say that also our main body of our research has been involved in crop circles, decoding the message of crop circles. And on our article page, we invite people to look at that if they're interested, because that also is a very spiritual and from the same source communication. And
we feel it's one of the major signs of the times we're living in that occurred over many years, and we've looked at it and found in many non-man-made formations revelatory information. So,
and we feel now that basically that part of it has pretty much ended. There hasn't been much non-man-made crop circle activity in England for the last few years, but
In our view. From our experience with you.
And the signs are moving into the sky, and that's why it's on the increase.
We say to people, look up more than to look down at this point.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on the show again just to cover that.
It's been a real pleasure, James. Thank you so much for talking with us.
It has been a great pleasure.
Great, and you'll definitely have to come up here sometime and see what's going on here.
We'd love to.
I think you'd be like a kid in a candy store because this is just a beautiful sanctuary here.
It looks beautiful.
Pristine energy.
We
may take you up on that, so we'll be talking more.
Great, anytime.
Thank you very much.
Again, thank you so much for coming on the show. And this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.